shift is hope that you enjoyed this rare and infamous moment that combines a first-rate disaster with genuine historical significance. But now it's time to take a deep breath and get those cameras out as we prepare to temporally reset you to one of the most fantastic catastrophes in history. Are you ready?
Everyone, and welcome back to the Time Shifters podcast. This is your host, Christopher, here, as always, with my good friend and co-host, Tom.
Howdy.
Tom? Hi, Tom. How have you been?
Oh, it's been a peculiar couple of weeks. I'm running into old guy disease where everything on my body seems to be breaking down, so trying to put the pieces back together.
Well, good luck with that.
Yes, thank you.
So, working on that myself, I think. What have you been up to besides breaking yourself?
Yeah, the breaking down has been mostly planning for some additional renovation at home, lots of work stuff, and then I am one of the folks that has taken up the mantle of watching Fallout.
Oh, okay. You know, I know of the game.
Yeah.
I think I knew that there was a series in the works or something like that, but I really haven't been paying that much attention to it.
Yeah, no, and I forget the release date. I think it was literally like 2 weeks ago. So, yeah, no, the Fallout series is actually proving to be incredibly enjoyable. And the one actor that... Ella Purnell is playing the lead, which is a character named Lucy, which if you're not familiar with the game or anything, it won't mean a whole lot to you. But she plays a character that has been living in the vault post-apocalypse. And they've been down there for 217 years. So she's the daughter of several down the line. But she is now faced with a scenario where she has to venture out of the vault to go find her father, and of course drama and action ensues, especially having the Fallout game and this show has set up a really interesting notion of kind of this pseudo-American sentiment that has to be carried on by those that dwell in the vaults so that when it's safe to return to the surface, America can return, which is very interesting. So,
yeah, huh?
But it's all based off of that whole 50s suburb mom's apple pie kind of America. So it's all super crazy innocent and over the top, hopeful and joyful, which is fun in its retroness, and then it plays very interestingly when you're actually out in the world that has been destroyed and the people that are there. But then
is this like a alternate reality where, you know, we didn't make it to the Cold War kind of thing?
What it is, yeah, the way the story kind of works, and I'm only gauging all of this from that because I wasn't a Fallout player, but essentially it's an alternate Earth in which kind of the 50s and 60s, that style of thing continued straight on to 2077.
Oh, okay.
And in 2077, the powers that be in the world have released nuclear warfare upon the planet. And
gotcha.
Everybody has to catch up from there. But no, there's also an actor, Walton Goggins, who plays what is essentially the same character, but you get to see him over a crazy span of life because he was alive before the blast, and then he's something else after, which there's
okay.
A group of characters called the Ghouls, and he is one of them and the predominant one. So
gotcha.
Yeah, very fun, very interesting look. The retro feel mixed with this post-apocalyptic thing is really very cool.
Cool. Where's this airing?
This is on Amazon Prime.
Oh, so okay. It is on Prime.
You have access to it.
Yeah, I'll check that out.
Yeah, no, it's one of those. I'm never going to be that guy that says, it's not just like the video game, so it's terrible. I can't even get into that since I didn't play. So this has its own feel. I understand it hits on some of the stuff from the game, so it would be a fun watch for you.
Excellent. All right. Very cool. Then I will definitely check that out. Been up to anything else?
No, that's watching that and getting work done is most of my life for that and dealing with my injuries.
Gotcha. You brought it up on the last episode, so I did go and watch Head of the Family.
Yeah.
You're right. The acting is a lot of fun.
It is. They know what they're in.
The characters are a lot of fun. The acting's really good. I did feel like it was maybe a little longer than it needed to be.
Possibly, yes.
I think you could have told that story in an hour, and it would have been great at the hour and a half that it is, I think, or an hour and 20-something minutes.
Yeah, it could have made a good amazing tale or amazing stories.
Yeah, yeah. At the full feature length that it is, I felt like... All right. If you go any further, I'm gonna be really bored.
Yes. Yes.
But no, it was actually there was many moments of fun. Let me put it that way. The overall, I think it was okay, but there was some really great bits in it.
No, there are, and the dynamic between what was his name, Milton?
Myron.
Myron, the big-headed guy. And the protagonist in the film, who I've forgotten the character's name, but
yeah, I don't recall.
No, but he's the down on his luck pretty boy in town. But their dynamic made that movie. I mean, yes, it's everything that you described. But anytime the two of them were playing off of each other, you just like. You think you even know what's going to happen from all other bad movies like this, and then they'll put their little tweak on it, and the conversation doesn't entirely go like you would have expected.
Blake Adams played Lance as the character
Lance,
you're trying to think
yes,
of.
Yes, Lance.
Yes, yes, he was great. I think Jacqueline Lovell as Loretta is really what made the fun. She was hilarious. Her facial expressions and the way she talked and her character, I thought was so much fun.
And she's not hard to look at.
No, she was adorable.
Yes.
To say the least.
But yeah, no, even her character, the way that you kind of get her at the beginning, the complexities that she threw into her own preservation kind of thing, were kind of impressive. You weren't kind of expecting that out of that character. It was fun.
Yeah, no, it was. So, yeah, I had a good time watching it overall. So, yeah, fun.
I'm glad you at least got something out of it. Yeah.
I have been diving back into an old favorite of mine.
Yes.
I've been watching Iron Chef Japanese.
Yeah. There's an entire Pluto TV channel to that.
It's on Freevee.
Sure.
So I've been watching it there, and that show is so. I was obsessed with that one back in the late '90s, early 2000s when it was on here in the Food Network.
Yep.
Loved that show, and it is still so much fun.
It is.
The pageantry and the over the top. Of everything about that show is just so great.
They managed to get that right mix of that Japanese game show element into a cooking show.
Yeah. And there's a little bit of drama and then like all the fanfare and Chairman Kaga and his ridiculous outfits and just the premise alone is hilarious and so much fun. I really enjoy that show. And I was watching one just last night, and my wife cannot watch a lot of it. because of some of the ingredients that they pull out and have to start chopping up and everything. And the one I was watching was it was going to be the 2000th dish.
Okay.
And the ingredients were revealed to be pork, bananas,
okay,
and soft shell turtle, which of course were alive.
Oh God.
And so the ingredients rise up and there's the tank and, you know, soft shell turtle. And I go, aw. And my wife looks at me. She's like, after everything they've chopped up, that's what gets an aw.
Yeah. Well, not many others were coming up alive.
Eels and fishes, but I don't know. It's a turtle. It's different.
Too funny.
Yeah. The only other thing I've been doing occasionally is I've been dipping into Star Trek Voyager.
Oh, yeah?
I thought I gave that show at least 3 seasons. I'm still in, like, first season. I don't remember almost anything. I'm wondering if I gave it 3 episodes. I don't know if it's just that because that wasn't the show that was on constant rerun and I like Next Gen was, and I just didn't watch it a lot, and maybe I only saw them once and then never again. But yeah, usually there's some little vestige of a memory when an episode comes along like that, and I'm watching these now and I'm like, no idea.
Yeah, actually that was a problem mostly for like DS9 and Voyager. Is Next Gen got playtime like the original series got playtime. You could catch that on almost anything, and that was even after the show ended. But DS9 and Voyager didn't have that kind of syndication.
No, I wasn't sure. Like I said, it wasn't, even if it did, it wasn't really the series that I was going to kind of reach out for.
Right.
Whereas Next Gen, like you said, if I see a Next Gen and I'm not doing anything, oh, I'm going to stop and watch Next Gen. Mm-hmm. Voyager, not so much. You know, I'll go do something else maybe.
Oh, actually, even speaking of that, Pluto TV did like a March Madness style bracket for some of its channels, and, mm-hmm. and the Next Gen channel came out on top.
Yeah, nice.
That was the one that got most of the fandom points.
Speaking of Trek, just real quick, it'll be a while ago by the time everyone hears this, but over the past the weekend prior to us recording, a man named John Trimble passed away. And that name may not mean a whole lot to anybody by just hearing the name, but he and his wife were pretty much responsible for saving Star Trek back in the 60s.
I read that.
NBC was going to cancel Star Trek after the second season. John and his wife caught wind of this, and they started the letter writing campaign that convinced NBC to give Star Trek its 3rd season.
Wow.
And because of that, they then had enough episodes to sell the show into syndication.
Which is what then made Star Trek a thing from then on out.
Yes, exactly. So as I put it in my post on the Facebook page, after that, it's nearly 60 years of history. They were as responsible for Star Trek as Lucille Ball was, yeah, in helping Roddenberry get it on the air, as Roddenberry was in actually creating the show. Without this couple, this show, we would not be talking about Star Trek today.
No, not at all. It had been lost to time.
Yeah, it would be that series, that little blip. It'd be a write-up in some book about some failed sci-fi show on NBC.
I actually even kind of wonder, is this the first time a letter campaign to save a show ever happened?
It's a good question. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if it'd be the first or not. I have to think there was probably a lot of letter campaigns and maybe in the 50s and stuff for things, but
perhaps, but yeah, I mean, that's the first I've ever heard of anyone doing something, and not only doing something to try to save their show, but succeeding in the process.
Yeah.
usually networks don't cave unless you get a big enough swell, and it has to be pretty big these days.
And I love the fact that apparently he, you know, the franchise, Paramount, they acknowledged his importance, and he and his wife would, you know, they'd have him out and they'd attend lots of the galas and premieres and conventions and things. And it's just really neat to see somebody that, you know, who is passionate about something go to that much trouble, to go to the effort and then be recognized for it. And then to have the actual production company in the end to go, thank you.
Yes.
For doing so. You need to be a part of this new thing we're doing. So could you come to the, I mean, they were just at the Picard premiere.
Oh, were they?
The third season. I think it was the third season Picard premiere party or something like that.
Oh, that
Trimble was there.
That's so very like, cool.
That's awesome.
Yes. No, that's a good story. I love that. And yes, no, if you think about it, I'm not sure how Paramount gets to exist without the presence of Star Trek, because no matter what they make, that's kind of the engine that just keeps it all moving.
Yes, yes. They've had other hits.
Sure.
But there's been that steady income that Star Trek has brought them over these 60 years.
I saw something online recently. I should have tied it into I should have shared it out to our space, but somebody had like this chart of like sci-fi franchises by how much content is actually available.
Oh yes, I posted that on the Facebook.
Yes, you did. That's right.
It would take you about 29 days to watch all of everything that's ever been created of Star Trek.
Yeah, it's easily 2/3 more than Star Wars, which is the next largest.
Yes, yeah, more than Bond, more than Star Wars. Yeah, that chart is fantastic because
yeah,
you just see this little thing, and this tower.
Yes.
That is Trek.
And that is the hours of available content across all of its franchise. That's just amazing.
Yeah, that's very cool. I love the fact that if you literally start and end back to back, if you watch everything, it would take you a month.
Right.
That's awesome.
Well, yeah, I don't know why I didn't even remember it was you posting it, because I was the one that suggested every month is Star Trek month.
Right, because I was like, what month is going to be Trek month? February's out. We're out with it's got too few days.
Yeah, that's the fun part is, yes, you consume all of February and still need a little March.
Yes.
And that's just it. And that counter still going up.
Yeah, yeah, and it continues, yes.
With not really an end in sight anytime soon.
No, I don't know. I guess Doctor Who would probably be the only thing that I think would probably beat it. As far in the genre, anyway.
Yeah, in the genre, no. I'd be curious. Everyone knows Simpsons tops everybody's.
Yes, yeah. Simpsons has a lot. There's many soap opera, you know, that have been running for decades and decades.
True.
So I'm sure you could count that. But within the genre, I think only Doctor Who might come close.
Right. And even then, while I know it had a long, long, long run, I don't know if that compares against all the movie content, too, and multiple series.
I just looked it up here as of, let's see where the date was for this one, where this article was written. At the time of this article that was written, which is several years old.
Ooh.
Let's see, the total won't be going up for a while. No new show slated for 2016. So this article was in 2015.
Oh my God.
But
yeah.
At that time, it would only take you 21 days, 22 hours and 30 minutes. So about 22 days. So you honestly could probably only add another day, maybe. So Trek still beats it.
Yeah. And oh, by the way, I hung a United Federation of Planets flag outside.
Yeah, that's very cool. we're talking about that before we recorded. I've contemplated getting one of those myself for the house. Just as a way to like, I feel like that's a really great way to say everything that like a rainbow or ally flag would say, but be really geeky at the same time.
It's funny. I literally just got one of my friend's kids in the neighborhood. She was walking by the house while I was putting it up, and she knows me well enough. She's like, "Is that a Star Trek thing?" you're absolutely right that it is, but I explained a little of it to her, and I said, you have to understand what this means for me. The United Federation of Planets is the ultimate symbol of unity, diversity, cultural mixing, everything. The whole idea of peace before all, that's what it symbolizes. So it's my geeky way of just saying, I'm here for it all.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, either UFP flag, or maybe you could put like a big edict symbol or something.
Yes.
You know, on the would work as well.
That would be fun as well.
I would actually like I want a yard sculpture of the edict symbol. That would be cool. Like in the garden sort of thing?
Yeah, I know, because at a quick glance, someone would just think it's a sundial.
Yeah. Yeah, that'd be cool. That'd be fun. I'm going to be looking for that. Okay.
Don't look
more
for
on that
it.
Later.
Make it.
I'll get my son to do
there
it.
There you go. Absolutely.
He's the artist.
He is the artist. We totally get him to do it.
All right. Well, I'll tell you what. Let's go ahead and end the top of the show. Let's take a break. And we will listen to a promo for another show. And then when we get back, we are going to talk about 2006's Children of Men.
Spine-tingling, nerve-shattering podcast featuring all your favorite monsters. You won't believe your ears when you listen to Monster Kid Radio. Here are your hosts, Derek M. Cook, and his ever-rotating stable of guests discuss your favorite classic and sometimes not-so-classic monster movies. Subscribe to Monster Kid Radio through iTunes or Stitcher, or visit MonsterKidRadio.net before the next weekly episode of Monster Kid Radio. Go through the archives for interviews with Sarah Karloff, Victoria Price, and Joel Hodgson. Listen to discussions about movies like Creature from the Black Lagoon, Island of Terror, and King Kong. And don't forget convention coverage from Monster Bash and the H.P. Lovecraft Film Festival. Classic Monsters, Modern Talk, and the Head of Rondo Hatton. Only on Monster Kid Radio!
I can't really remember when I last had any hope. And I certainly can't remember when anyone else did either. Because really, since women stopped being able to have babies, what's left to hope for?
The world was stunned today by the death of Diego Ricardo, the youngest person on the planet. The youngest person on Earth was 18 years, 4 months, 20 days, 16 hours, and 8 minutes old.
The ultimate mystery, why are women infertile? Some say it's genetic experiments, pollution. Why do you think we can't make babies anymore?
Doesn't matter. It's all over in 50 years. It's too late.
Move along! Move along!
Hello, Theo. How have you been? I'm sorry about the theatrics. Police have been a pain lately.
I haven't seen you for nearly 20 years.
Need your help. Not for me, a girl. Need to get her to the coast, past security checkpoints. hard for me to look at you. He had your eyes.
So why did you come to me?
I trust you.
Show him.
Now you know what's at stake.
We have to meet the boat.
What is this boat?
The Human Project have sent a boat.
The Human Project?
Yes, the greatest minds in the world working for a new society.
Your baby is the miracle the whole world has been waiting for.
We will find a way to get you to the Human Project, I promise you.
We're almost there, Keith. We're almost there.
Children of Men is an action thriller directed and co-written by Alfonso Cuarón and was released through Universal Pictures. It is based on a 1992 novel, The Children of Men, written by P.D. James. The film stars Clive Owen and Claire Hope Achete with Julianne Moore, Michael Caine, excuse me if I get this wrong, Chiwetel Ejiofor, and Pam Ferris. I think that's pretty close.
Seen him in a lot of stuff too, but yes, I don't know.
As I know, it's really annoying is I see him in a ton of things. I know him, I like him, and I feel terrible that I have such a rough time pronouncing his name.
I really need to hear him pronounce it somewhere in an interview or something.
Yes, I need to. I tried to look up. I looked up just pronunciations. What I should have done is tried to find an interview yeah. with him where they actually announce him. So my apologies for not doing my due diligence. This film is set in 2027, nearly two decades after the human race has become infertile. The world is in chaos after countless wars have brought on a global depression. Only the United Kingdom is holding on to anything that can be recognized as civilization. Millions of refugees have flocked to the United Kingdom, but an anti-immigrant fervor has taken hold. Immigrants are rounded up, imprisoned, or executed. Former activist turned bureaucrat Theo Farron is kidnapped by the Fishes, a militant pro-immigrant rights group that is led by Farron's ex-wife, Julian. She asks that he use his influence with his cousin, a government minister, to obtain travel papers for a young girl, an illegal, in order to get her to the coast. Farron discovers that this girl is pregnant, and getting her to the safety of something called the Human Project, a research group supposedly located in the Azores that are trying to cure the human infertility, becomes a harrowing fight for survival as Farron must protect the girl from the government and the Fishes who want to use the baby as a political tool in their fight against the British government. This film is known for what seems to be several long, continuous action scenes. These were not the single takes as they appear, but cleverly edited multiple takes blended together with CGI. These techniques were important for three continuous shots, the coffee shop explosion in the opening shot, the car ambush, and the battlefield scene. The coffee shop scene was composed of two different takes over two consecutive days, and the car ambush was shot in six sections and at four different locations over 1 week and required five seamless digital transitions. The battlefield scene was captured in five separate takes over two locations. The effects team created over 160 of these types of effects for the film. And that is actually one of those things that really stood out for me in this film is how it was shot. Mm-hmm. I loved watching this film for these seemingly single take action scenes. Very impressive work.
Well, yeah, no, because you're in the film. You're a character.
Yeah, you feel like you're a participant.
Yes, no, it's not so much that you're watching. It's more that without doing the shaky cam thing, you're side by side with these characters as they go through what they go through.
Yeah, and I really like that you don't feel like you're in a video game while doing it. You do feel like a bystander. Mm-hmm. You just happen to be walking ahead of this person.
Yeah, no, we seem to be glued to Theo at all times. And we're going to know everything that he does through his day.
You know, I'm not a fan of like found footage and first person.
Right.
That's a gimmick that wears on me really quickly.
Yep.
And this film kind of has, it's going to be weird to, as I say this, it even sounds weirder, but it has that feel mm-hmm. without having that feel.
Yeah. No, and I think that's what I was trying to describe with that. It is the found footage is the sense that you're there because that camera was there. It really happened all in front of it. And because that found footage is that notion, this is real. This is somebody's possession that they took this from.
Mm-hmm.
This has that feel only from the fact that you actually feel like you're there. But it's more fluid than a found footage.
I like when the explosion, the coffee shop explosion,
mm-hmm.
and after that scene ends, there's a ringing. You know, it's the ringing in Theo's ears.
Yeah.
And that ringing carries on into the next scene and then slowly fades away. I mean, it again, to just give you that immersion.
Yes. I mean, that's more you aren't watching it. You were right next to him when it all happened. That ringing is mm-hmm. coming because it's your ears that are not hearing. Not that that's what he's hearing. It's what you're hearing.
Yeah. No, it was a really, really well shot film. Yeah. This was a first time watch for me.
Was it?
I had not seen it. Yeah. It was one of those films that probably even as soon as it came out, it seemed like something I was going to watch someday. Mm-hmm. And I just did not ever, I just never got around to it.
See, I'm a particular fan of Clive Owen. So this one I actually did see in the theater as well.
Mm, okay.
And then have watched at least one other time.
I have to think that this film in the theater would be an even better experience, being able to get that the sound and everything all around you.
Yeah, it's a good immersion.
Really good. Yeah.
No, and that's how I remember it. And that's the part that makes it that much more of an uncomfortable film. I mean, I tell you right now, I like this film a lot. I can't love it because it is a hard watch, too. There's nothing feel good about this. Even the little hopeful part is left. Is it? Yeah, there's a lot of ambiguity. On purpose.
Oh, no, absolutely. No, I did appreciate that as well. I think I would have been very disappointed if this really was like a really happy, fuzzy feeling ending.
No, and since the point of this story is to travel the arc with the Theo character, I mean, we are literally, I'm not kidding, we're glued to his side. Every scene is his scene. So as you're going through this film and you're along for that ride, and he's even given a view into the hope that could be here for the world that they live in. We don't get to know because he doesn't get to know.
Mm-hmm.
Because he dies in the boat. And
oh, spoilers.
I know, but come on. It's almost 20 years old. So,
that's a good point.
So at this stage, but at any rate, yeah, no, the whole, because that's what happens, it makes it, it wouldn't have felt any more right. Just because the boat showed up doesn't mean that everything's okay. Because we won't get to know. We died with him.
I don't know. Was the name of the boat mentioned earlier in the film?
Yes.
Or do we only... Was it?
It
okay,
was.
I think
supposed
I
supposed to find tomorrow.
Okay. I was going to say, so the whole premise of the film is, you know, to have hope for tomorrow.
Right. Yeah. It's a little on the nose.
Maybe.
But because the way they craft it works.
Yeah. No, it's fitting. I think it's definitely fitting.
Yeah.
Right off the bat, I mean, you can't ignore and not discuss the anti-immigrant
mm-hmm.
and while it was perhaps exaggerated in this film,
yes,
it unfortunately has a very strong resemblance to
now
attitudes that are even going on today
globally.
Yeah, globally, unfortunately.
No, yeah, I'm not saying there weren't immigration issues in 2007, but today, well, one, while we want to think the movie is an exaggeration, depending on where you are in the world, maybe not so much.
Very true. And there are, I think, people in positions of power, in this country and also in the United Kingdom, that probably would have no problem seeing immigrants treated the way that they are treated in this film.
Even 4 years ago, we were locking immigrants in cages.
Well, even before that, unfortunately.
Before that, and probably still a bit now.
Yes, no, I'm sure it's still going on, sadly.
But yeah, so we, the U.S., may not be far off of what was projected in this movie.
I was watching the film, and I thought it was interesting that it is and does take place in the United Kingdom, and it didn't somehow get transferred to the United States as far as a setting. But then it occurred to me, you really couldn't do that. You couldn't tell this story in the United States just because of what they needed to do.
Mm-hmm.
You couldn't be like in Colorado and say, we have to get this girl to the coast. And like, we're going to be here a long time.
Yeah, no, you'd still have to set that pretty close to your destination in the U.S. And well, depending on your points of view and the American attitude of things versus the British attitude of things, I'm certain, and it comes off that way, the bureaucracy and all that comes off somehow very British in the way that it's even handled. I mean, it's very pragmatic, a little distanced from feeling, but still that notion, we're going to take care of the British side and all the rest of you can just go away.
Yes.
So that's fitting, but in the U.S., that would come off a whole lot different and not better. Just could be a lot uglier, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, and a lot more mix. I like... We're a little schizophrenic as a country, so I can only imagine what a version of this would look like posted here.
I get the impression from the way, some of the discussions in this film, that the United States really doesn't exist anymore. We definitely know New York is gone.
Yes.
As I believe his parents and Julian's parents were in New York. His mother and her parents were in New York when it happened.
Yes.
Quote unquote. So yes.
Whatever it was.
And I think that makes a little bit of sense too. Cause if you're talking about, you know, post nuclear war, let's be honest, it's going to be between the United States and someone else.
Right.
Whether it be China or Russia or Korea. And there is a good chance that England could come out not unscathed, but in the best position.
There's potential there, and it depends. Yeah, everything's circumstantial. And I missed it if it was mentioned. Was there actually nuclear war?
I don't know if there was nuclear war. I think I definitely got that impression as being sort of a, you know, no one explains why the infertility has happened. But I think there is discussion where it was just kind of like, oh, we don't know if it's this, this, or this. And, you know, is it the radiation? Is it the food? Is it whatever? And then when we were talking about something happening in New York, obviously something big, if it's going to take out both sets of parents.
Right. The only reason I was trying to catch up if maybe any of that had happened is because if you remember at the opening of the film, everyone is mourning the passing of the youngest human on the planet.
Yes.
And he's in South America.
Mm-hmm.
So,
okay.
So there's clearly some societies, other places. The way that I kind of took it with this film and why I think if it was set in the U.S., it'd be way uglier is I picture almost a scenario where the U.S. did not take this as well, and we probably broke down faster than some. So whatever happened in New York may be self-inflicted.
Yeah, it's possible, because I don't see anything. I mean, when you look up any information of this film, there is nothing about a war.
Nope.
I mean, maybe that's me kind of putting my own impressions.
It's kind of where we sit in the thing, our thinking right now in the world that we live in. So
yeah,
I get it.
Yeah.
No, I turned it more on the notion of that
societal breakdown.
Societal breakdowns, and I wouldn't have a hard time believing that the U.S. might have not handled that as well as others.
No, agreed. And yet there is a history of England soldiering on in adversity.
Yes, no, I mean, that it is in their nature. I mean, that soldiering on is just a standard for them.
Yes, so... So, yeah, so you can see where they would decide, oh, the whole world's going to shit. Close the borders, and we'll take care of ourselves.
We'll ride it out however we can.
Yes. I didn't find a whole heck of a lot as far as, you know, the right and wrong of the future. You know, we obviously have not had a global depression.
No, thankfully.
Yet. I mean, this takes place in 2027, so we still have a few years.
We got to get through this year.
It mentioned a 2008 flu pandemic.
Yes.
That apparently took the life of Theo and Julian's son.
Yes.
Only off by about 11 years and the wrong virus.
Sure.
But there was definitely...
But no, the notion of a pandemic that hit and ravaged families.
Yes, it was definitely something I picked up. Yeah, other than that, I mean, the technology and everything was all very recognizable.
And suitable to the world that they live in, because you figure after the notion that in 2007 they stopped having kids,
mm-hmm.
It being 20 years down the road, how much would you have advanced anything?
Right.
Knowing that we're basically looking at our own demise.
The only advancement is in a little bit of medicine and mentality is the idea of self-inflicted suicide being a norm and even encouraged.
Mm-hmm.
And you had commercials just like you have commercials for medicines for hair loss or your ED or whatever. No, you have... I forget what the name of the product, but it was effectively it delivered to your home and for a quick and easy suicide.
Yeah. No, there's a...
go out on your terms.
The only other little thing I saw is for whatever reason, even in their crappiest of vehicles, they all had like a heads up display.
Yeah, true. You know, it's funny. I noticed, for as anti-immigrant and, you know, pro-British and everything, one of the cars they were driving around in was definitely French.
Oh, yeah, no, absolutely. I think there was a... I think that the first and the primary car that we saw was a Citroen.
Yeah, I believe so. The one I only remember because I recognize it from a Top Gear episode.
Exactly. That's why I know the shape. So, well, you know, there were French cars in England. You go with what you got.
I suppose so. I think the director actually, you know, none of the cars had badging or anything on them. They did modify them. He wanted them to look odd, but still recognizable to modern vehicles.
Yeah.
He gave them a sort of a future or kind of ragtag look, like we're making this do.
Right.
Almost like a, if you see cars, if you ever see any photos or videos of the 1950s automobiles that are in Cuba,
yeah,
that they've just kind of Frankenstein. Oh, yeah. Just keep slapping any part they can find that they can make fit.
Whatever fits the or going. They can force.
Yes. That's what I think these cars kind of have that look to.
No, they definitely have that feel. And well, not to mention that you don't have to promote anyone.
Yeah. You take the badging off. You don't have to pay or ask for anything. The acting, you said you were a fan of Clive Owen.
Yes.
I know he's an actor that I've seen in things. Mm-hmm. I can't say, I'm trying to think, okay, what have I seen him in for sure? And I don't know that I could pick anything out.
Oh.
But he is an actor. I mean, seeing him in this, I do like him. I thought he did a really great job.
Well, if you need recommendations and haven't seen it and like a good bank heist kind of film,
mm-hmm.
Inside Man.
Okay.
Yes.
Pretty good.
It's very good, and Clive Owen is a big part of why. So.
Nice. That's from a 2000, same year as this, 2006. Mm-hmm. All right, cool. Oh, he was in Sin City, wasn't he?
He was in Sin City. He's been, well, he's got a long, very long career.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know, some other the bigger names, mm-hmm. Like Julianne Moore and Michael Caine, really kind of small roles, important,
yes.
But small roles. Surprising, considering that whenever you see this thing listed, their names are always at the kind of the top of the list. Sure. And Julianne Moore probably only has 10 minutes of screen time.
If, yeah, no, no. And I rewatching it, I had actually forgotten that she was in it because she's in it for so short of time. So, but quite the time. While she is on screen.
Yeah, and that's kind of how I felt about Michael Caine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he shows up for a few minutes towards the beginning, and then we leave the character. And I actually was thinking, that's all we're going to see him, isn't it? And I'm going to be disappointed that we're not going to see him again, because that's a great character. That, you know, Jasper was fantastic.
No, Jasper was great.
But happily, we do return and get to see him again.
Jasper's also that, given the point of this movie and the darkness in this movie, Michael Caine's character Jasper is just that breath of air that you get so that you can make the next slog.
Yeah.
And when I say slog, I mean, it is an enjoyable film, but it is a dark, dark commentary on humanity and where we might go even when there's a sense of hope. So
yeah, maybe that's why I never got around to actually watching the film, is I kept hearing from people that it's really dark.
Yeah.
And I was like, I tend to, when I watch a film, I don't want to watch a film to be depressed.
And while you can appreciate the storytelling, you can appreciate the acting, but at the end of it all, you just don't feel good.
No.
And that's the thing about this. While you are left with a small glimmer sense of hope, technically you died at the end of the movie.
Well, and even scattered throughout the film, there is moments where you think, all right, all is not lost. I think it's a great scene when they're all in the apartment complex and the military, it's when everything's kicked off and, you know, the fishes are going up against the government. There's the big battle.
Yeah.
The baby's been born and they're trying to get down the stairs and the baby's crying and everyone just kind of like does that, holy crap, don't fire. And everyone is just agog at the scene, this baby, mm-hmm. This first baby anyone's seen in 20 years.
Yep.
All the soldiers, everyone is just mesmerized and stunned watching this, seeing this baby and hearing it cry as they walk through. And they let, you know, the people they've been kind of shooting at for the last 20 minutes just walk by. Mm-hmm. And in that little moment, you think, you know, those guys are having thoughts. There's hope. You know, these guys are seeing a little bit of hope, and then it all kicks off again in an instant.
Yes.
But it's a great scene.
No, it that's the scene that stands out. It's why I even revisit it when I revisit this film, is to get to that moment. It's such a good one.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's just as dark when they leave it.
Yeah, but unfortunately, there's also, I mean, for all the good things you see in some people, you see the darker side too. Mm. You know, you see the actions of some of the fishes that are determined to get this kid at any cost.
Yeah.
Because they see some bargaining chip in it.
Mm-hmm.
For the further their cause. And whoever gets hurt in the process doesn't matter.
Right. Admittedly, as I was researching the reviews, when we get to those, I came across one that really kind of hit on, we're already very tied to Theo throughout this. He's the reason we're there. But someone in their review actually pointed out that this is also just watching your own humanity unfold. When we meet Theo, he is bland, robotic, stuck in his time till that bomb goes off and it sets him in another direction now. As he starts to go down that, there are moments where you actually see him kind of becoming more in touch with the world as a whole, as he... You can almost see his senses turn on, and he achieves the fullness of his life and dies as a result. And that's very deep, but I see it when this person described it all. It was very cool.
I like that there's characters that are gray.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're not black, they're not white, they're not good, they're not evil. What's her name? Key.
Mm-hmm.
She just happens to be the woman that got pregnant.
Right.
Is she a good person? Is she a bad person? I mean, we really don't know. She seems nice. You know, she seems nice. She seems fun. She seems to care for this baby that she's had. Mm-hmm. But
she,
what was her life? You get the impression her life before was maybe a life of prostitution.
Yes, because, I mean, she makes the comment she has no idea who this the father of this baby is.
Right, yeah. She. I think she even says, I usually don't get their names.
Right.
I think is the line she gives.
Yeah.
Is she a good person? Does she set out to save the world? Does she care whether the world is saved? Mm-hmm. No, probably not. She really just cares about her baby.
Right.
You know, the motherhood thing kind of kicked in for her. Just as easily could have not. You know, you could definitely see in this film, in this universe, you could see a woman, oh my gosh, I'm pregnant. Oh my gosh, I had a kid. Well, I ain't dealing with that. And, you know, leaving it in a dumpster.
No.
That wouldn't have been outside of the realm of possibility in this world.
Well, and what I also found interesting, nice little touch, is that after she's had the baby, she's had no experience with there being babies.
Right.
Because for the most part, the world hasn't had experience with there being babies. So the whole notion, she's even through observation, she has no idea what to do with this child. Mm-hmm. And that's where Theo has to actually provide former parenting skills, again,
right,
putting it more in touch with the life that he kind of blotted out.
I do kind of wish that they at least showed that a little bit more, because we go through, you know, an entire day at least of her carrying this baby around, and I'm thinking, has she fed it?
Right.
Has she tried to nurse this child? I have no idea whether this kid's been fed.
Right. Right. No, you have to assume some of that probably did happen. It would have had to have happened, but
Yeah, you had the character of Miriam, played by Pam Ferris, also a great character. You know, she's actually her and the director, both from we've seen her before in a Harry Potter film. Was she also in The Prisoner of Azkaban? Because he directed that film.
I believe that she was.
Right, yeah. And he directed that, so that's the second time we've seen this director on the show.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so she was kind of playing the, if you want to call it a midwife.
Yes.
For Key. So yes, I take it a lot of things happened off camera.
Sure.
But I guess I kind of would have, on one hand, I would have liked to have seen her try to explain to Key how to be a mom, what she needs to do to take care of this child. On the other hand, I don't want to see this film stretched into like 2 hours. It's already pushing an hour 40.
No, so. And something like that, especially since she would have been forced into trying to ask Theo, given given the circumstances, that would have might have gone more comedic than that. Like, Jasper was as close as lighthearted moments as we were going to get in this film, and that would have probably taken him out of their tone.
Yeah. Yeah, no, very good point. Yeah, you don't want to lighten the mood too much.
And not in the wrong spot.
Right.
Because at that moment, you're literally leading to that dramatic climactic scene right then and there. It's not when you'd want to start interjecting, so how do you feed a baby?
Right. Yeah, no, it was really interesting. I'm glad I finally watched it. It's a good one, and it's one I'll probably watch again when I just want to watch some kind of impressive cinematography.
Yeah.
Because regardless of what you think about the story or whether you think it's, you know, uplifting or not or whatever, it is a well-made film.
Yes, no, it's beautifully shot, great detail, good flow, and all the acting is just on point.
Which is very interesting when I get to the comments from the social media on this film.
What do we got there?
Cameron says that it didn't hold up to the hype. Too much shaky cam and annoyingly stating the obvious with a predictable ending was his thought.
Interesting.
Yeah, I didn't really get the shaky cam bit from this film. I there's some realism, but I don't think it's really the shaky cam. Not like I think of shaky cam.
And while I've never read the book that this is based off of, I don't know that I agree with the predictability of the end. Given how cinema usually works, that could have gone a whole lot different and normally would.
Yeah. Brenda says, ugh, it left me with a movie hangover for a couple days. I don't know if that's a like it or hate it. Because honestly, you could like this film and still be hungover from it.
Right. No, I don't know that. Yeah, that's the thing from her comment. I don't know if you can really get a gauge on how she felt about that. But the hangover part I do get. It is a very heavy topic and the way that it's handled. You're like, okay, that was a lot.
Friend of the show, filmmaker Monty Light, chimed in over on Twitter and says he never cared for it.
Really?
Yeah, unfortunate. And my wonderful co-host from my other podcast, Orphan Entertainment, Lydia, chimed in. She says that this movie has been on my to-watch list since it came out. Maybe this weekend? I didn't get a follow-up that I know of, so I'm assuming that didn't happen. But I will have to, try to get her to give it a watch and let me know what she thought of it.
Yeah, no, that'd be fun to hear.
So what did the critics think of this one? That's all I've got from the social media.
Like, completely the other way around. with one glaring exception. So I really only had to take two. They basically, everybody really thought well of this film. And of course, leading the charge is our friend Roger Ebert when he was And this is officially with Chicago Sun-Times. He writes, the performances are crucial because all of these characters have so completely internalized their world that they make it palatable and themselves utterly convincing. Caron, the director, fulfills the promise of a futuristic fiction. Characters do not wear strange costumes or visit the moon, and the cities are not plastic hallucinations, but look just like today, except tired and shabby. Here is certainly a world ending not with a bang, but with a whimper, and the film serves as a cautionary warning. The only thing we will have to fear in the future, we learn, is the past itself, our past, ourselves. A lot to say.
I like that. And I think that's an actually really great observation, that so many times we've seen films where the world ends with a bang. Mm-hmm. You know, that's always the giant natural disaster. It's the wars. This one is, we're just petering out.
Yep.
The human race is tired and it's going to fade. And that's it.
Yep. Whatever caused it, we are our own extinction, and not with anything dramatic. Just the lack of ability to populate.
Yeah. I find that premise fascinating, that the race just simply gets tired and dies. There's something so poetic yet disturbing and dark about it.
Well, yeah, because that is what's dark.
And there's a sense of beauty to it as well. I just love that idea.
Yeah, as an idea, I think they were probably a little spot on the response, to which no one is handling this well.
Right.
But yeah, that whole notion, what would we be like when we know the switch has been flipped and we're just waiting for the juice to run out. To continue with the professionals, again, another glowing review, but from New York Times, Manola Dargis, she writes, I think it's a she, apologize otherwise. Children of Men may be something of a bummer, but it's the kind of glorious bummer that lifts you to the rafters, transporting you with the greatness of its filmmaking. So, yes, recognizing it's dark, but it did it well.
Yes.
Yes. And then to round it out, because there's got to be some hater in there. And I know it's going to shock you who it's coming from. If this is Wall Street Journal, Joe Morgenstern.
Mm-hmm.
One of my favorites. He writes,
Joe, I don't love anything Morgenstern.
Yeah, no, could be a pristine masterpiece. And I'm like, you know, it could have been better.
Bambi. Ugh.
I wish I had been the one that got shot.
Princess Boar, more like.
Anyway, our friend Mr. Morgenstern writes, bloated adaptation of P.D. James' thoughtful, compact novel. That's it. That's what I got.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Couldn't get to the rest of the article. It had to have been a treat. But but yeah, that man will hate on everything. So
I wonder if he actually read it.
Right? Now you got to wonder.
He just looked it up and saw, wait, that was only 250 pages. Can't make a...
Right.
Can't make a film off of that.
You're right. Nobody's ever taken an idea and expanded upon it before.
No, never.
Anyway, but yeah, bloated adaptation. I don't even know necessarily what this means. I haven't read that, but that's just sound like having a problem to have a problem.
I definitely get the impression sometimes Morgenstern is a little bit of a contrarian. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so...
He heard critic and literally took it as meaning, I need to tell you what's wrong.
Yeah. Not allowed to enjoy a film. Nope.
Apparently he doesn't. He really needs a new line of work.
All right, well, that is going to do it for Children of Men.
I think so.
If you have any thoughts on this film, please send them our way. Follow the link in the show notes to all the social media sites like our Discord channel, Blue Sky, Twitter, Mastodon, Facebook, etc. Or send us an email, timeshifterspodcast@gmail.com. Next episode, we're going to jump back to 1975 for a film I've been wanting to watch for ages and have just I just haven't.
I've never heard of it.
A Boy and His Dog, starring Don Johnson. This is, I think, one of Don Johnson's earliest films.
Yeah, I figure he's got to be like, what, 19, 20?
Yeah, absolutely. This film was released in 1975. It is set in the year 2024. So we'll see what happened in the
we'll see what's happening this year. Maybe we'll just get to it.
Yeah, we'll see what happened in the 50 years between this film's release and the and now, and compare it to our now. So that it should be fun. I'm looking forward to finally watching this movie. I'm
looking forward to figuring out what the heck this movie is.
That too. It is 1970s film with a bend into sci-fi, and I usually get a big kick out of those.
Yeah.
You know, those can go in a couple different directions.
Yeah.
When you think of some of the films that have come out in the 70s, you know, with the science fiction, with things like Soylent Green or Omega Man, or what was the one with, the spaceship with all the plants, Silent Running.
Oh, yeah, Silent Running.
All take very interesting directions. Mm-hmm. And the 70s are a fun time for films for me.
I know that they are.
So, yeah, I'm looking forward to this one. It's going to be fun. So it'll be a first-time watch for both of us, so that'll be awesome.
Yep.
All right, well, that is going to do it. Tom, as always, thank you very much. I've had fun.
Of course, even with such a dark movie.
Yes. We will talk to everyone in a couple weeks. Until then, bye, everybody.
See ya.